Back in 2005, Kenyan writer Binyavanga Wainaina published a satirical piece in the magazine Granta headlined, How to Write About Africa. Always use the word Africa, darkness, or safari in your title. Treat Africa as if it were one country. Tall, thin people who are starving, or hot and steamy short people who eat primates. Scott Baldoff, who just completed 5 years as the Christian Science Monitor's correspondent in South Africa, seems to agree with Wainaina in his recent essay for the paper called Five Myths About Africa. Those myths include that the continent is poor, is violent, needs our help, is backward, and is one country. That last one is easy. It's actually 54 countries. But the other myths are more tricky. Isn't the media criticized for not bringing more attention to drought and starvation and poverty and violence? And Scott at times seems to contort himself in denying his own list of myths. For instance, he writes about the middle class in South Africa, but 65% of the country still lives on less than $3 a day. He writes about a woman named Olga Timbella, who's taking care of her own two children and six others who were orphaned when relatives died of AIDS. Eventually, her marriage breaks up over the stress this put on the family. But Scott doesn't think this is poverty, or that her actions constitute a lack of wealth.
To me, that speaks of a different kind of wealth, of a generosity that often I find missing among middle-class South Africans, black and white. Here's a woman who is taking her month's rations and spreading it to a broader number of family members. And a lot of that comes down to a tradition within South African society called Ubuntu, which means humanness. You cannot be a human being and watch other people suffer. She ended up being able to then get child grants from the government to look after those kids. She also was then seen by other people within her extended family as being a wealthy woman because she was getting government grants, and they started showing up for handouts of their own. But for me, the wealth of her and her family was that generosity.
On to your other myth that Africa is violent. You say it's a myth, but then you begin the story about it by saying, I was robbed at gunpoint, you know.
Yeah. No, I believe it's a myth in the sense of this. This happened 6 months into my term as a reporter for the Christian Science Monitor in Johannesburg. That could have been a moment where I would have said, you know what, this place, I'm fed up. But then I started to think more about it. Now, South Africa is a society where wealth concentrates in the hands primarily of white, rich South Africans. But increasingly, there are now well-connected, politically connected blacks who also are prospering and are getting ownership positions in mining companies and telecommunications companies, etc. But the problem is there's not a lot of trickle-down to the 80-some-odd percent who live very, very poor lives. In a society like this, you would expect there to be crime. You would expect there to be violence. You would expect there to be anger. My experience was actually one in which, yes, I was robbed at gunpoint, but I was relatively unscathed. They wanted the money. They knew that I had money. It was actually quite professionally done. They had an insider at the bank where I had just visited, and so they didn't use force. That may be one person's experience, but it also, I think, speaks to a patience that one generally finds among the vast majority of South Africans who don't commit crimes, who may not have the greatest life, but they play by the rules. They don't try to get what they couldn't ordinarily get through just honest work.
Yeah. A couple of your other listings that Africa needs our help, and you skewer celebrities who go and sort of position themselves by refugee camps. A lot of people have done that, but it was surprising to read how many Africans you quote, you know, muttering under their breath, oh, there's that guy with the chiseled chin again on the cover of a magazine. But on the other hand, of course you're going to try to help someone after a disaster. What's missing? How to empower them? What is missing?
This is one issue that really befuddles me because I think that in a moment of weakness, many of those people would say, you know what, thank goodness that there is attention brought to this issue. Again, let's go to Somalia. If there was not public attention, if there were not people who were advocates for celebrity advocates for UNICEF or other organizations like this, bringing people's attention to that issue, even if it's in a cheap way, somebody dressed fabulously walking through Dadaab, refugee camp in Kenya on the Somali border. If they didn't bring that celebrity along, would the TV cameras follow?
But then you have your South African friends saying, oh, look, another white Tarzan has come to save us Africans.
I can completely understand that point of view because, unfortunately, these celebrities tend to be white. It might help if there were more black celebrities doing this and if those black celebrities got as much attention as George Clooney, as Matt Damon, as Angelina Jolie, etc. But frankly, this is the way we work in the United States. We follow celebrities. We pay attention to what they say. And when they say something interesting about Africa, we pay attention.
Yeah.
For Africans, they look at this and think, oh, come on, you know, we're much more than that. We're much more complex than that. And we have interests and needs that are beyond what you guys can describe.
You quote the sort of a rising star on this, the son of the slain leader, Stephen Biko, who says it's important to start this in grade school with Africans, this sort of teaching them that they have a politics, that they have a culture, that they can do things for themselves. And so, you know, that's part of what's happening there. The myth that Africa is backward, unbelievable amount of usage of social media, new technology.
People in Africa do amazing things with their cell phones. They not only will be able to send money to grandma out in the villages, they will also be able to pay their bills. People in Kenya, for instance, made use of their cell phone to basically create a brand new banking system that, you know, banks, ordinary banks in Kenya wouldn't have given them an account. But they can store up money in their cell phone by buying scratch cards.
They do money transfers and they wire money. They have a service called M-P-E-S-A, M-Pesa.
M-Pesa.
Yeah. They use it to store money or they can pay people over it. In Ethiopia, you met farmers who use cell phones to find the best price for their crops. So it really is pretty advanced.
It's incredibly advanced. Sometimes that negative perception of Africa gives you something that you can work against. There's a shock value when you do tell a story of a kid who creates a windmill, for instance, that in Malawi, that runs his family's electrical appliances. And he does this just by going to an internet cafe and researching for this stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, the ingenuity is there. If we are only looking for the conflict and only looking for the negative side, we'll find it, but we'll never find the other stuff too.
Scott Baldoff, we'll link you to his post as Africa correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor, his last post as he returns to the United States. Scott, thanks so much.
My pleasure.